Okay, when we come back, it'll be your turn. Phone calls with Jay Widener on Coast to Coast AM. Jay, where will you be on December 21st, 2012?
Well, we're hoping to have a gigantic concert at the Sphinx in Egypt. It's a long shot, but we're hoping for it, and we're trying to get a couple big acts to be there and do a big party.
You will have to call the show and call into us at that time, huh?
I will.
Let's take some calls. You ready?
Yep.
Anchorage, Alaska, we go. Clint, west of the Rockies. Staying safe out there? No earthquakes today?
No, we had one on Saturday.
Pretty good size one, too, wasn't it?
It was a pretty good jolt.
Yeah.
But we're used to them here. But thank you for taking my call, George.
Sure thing, Clint.
You were talking, or Jay was talking about the Denver International Airport, and I worked there in 1997, the summer, and I was we were towing for that convention. I guess it was the meeting of the Summit of the Eights, and eight major presidents met in Colorado, and we were to tow the cars off the premises. And then the barricades were on their own. And if a car was broke down on the airport, we had to tow it off in case they were trying to blow up the convoy. So I just, you know, that always is in my mind about that, how they did that. And my question was, you know, how sure are we they wouldn't take the is the Underground Railroad really true there or not?
Well, I mean, I don't know if it's true. Of course, I've never been there. I doubt if I'll ever be invited. But you would think that they would do something to protect themselves just because it makes common sense. So I think it's probably real. I don't know about, you know, the wilder conspiracy theories I've heard, but I think it's real. I think they've got something there. I think it's big, and I think it's huge, and I think it has something to do with the survival and high technology and experiments and all sorts of things. So
we got to get you and Alex Jones down there, Jay.
Oh yeah, they'd like us for sure.
They may not let you back out.
Yes, that would be more what I'd be afraid of. I think I'll stay topside.
Jim, driving around in Michigan, first-time caller. Hey, Jim.
Hey, how you doing tonight?
Doing great, thanks.
I just got a quick question. I seen a video earlier today. It was on YouTube that a friend of mine sent me from down in Kentucky. It was saying on the New World Order and how everything is coming to an end there. And it said that on the overpopulation part of it, that all the people... they could take all the people in the world, whatever it is, the billions of people, and actually put them in Australia and on a quarter acre of land, and it wouldn't even use up two-thirds of it, and that it would leave the rest of the world pretty much vacant. I mean, that's the, how they put it. And I was just wondering what your comment.
I have to agree with a lot with that. I flew over... Canada, Montana, Wyoming, you know, a few months ago, and there was just nobody, nowhere. And but again, you can go to certain places, and the population is absolutely frightening. Mexico City, Cairo, Sao Paulo. You go down there and you look around, and it is incredible. It is incredible. You can fit 20 million people in a place, and somehow they can still live and exist. So I think, you know, the ecosystems are going to break down. But again, I'm not sure it's population explosion or it's just a really, really bad and almost a crazy waste of resources. And so I think it's more of a consumption problem. But again, you know, populations should be curbed. I don't know at what rate, and I don't know by who. So that's my question.
All right, very good. Next up, Dee Dee in Oakland, California. Welcome to Coast. Hey, Dee Dee.
Hi, George. You are such a joy. And if I could just take a... Hi, Jay, and you are too. If I could just take a second, George, and tell you, do you know that you have gotten younger as you have been on the radio? I've been listening to you since the beginning. And
a couple more years, I'll be about 12 years old.
Your light is really shining brightly. Anyway, I was calling, Jay, to comment on your wonderful program tonight and the information that you brought forward. And as our number lady has told us, this is a two-year. And what I wanted to bring forth is that, to me, it reminds me of the saying, to cast off the garments of darkness and to don the armor of light. It's as if, you know, with the en masse concentrated focus experiments that George has done and that we all in the Coast to Coast family have done, if we truly focus on the light in the most literal sense and in the most subtle sense of the word, lightness, laughter, love, that if we focus in mass on the best and the highest and the goodness and the kindness and the compassion and caring for others and ourselves, may lie our only hope. And that true alchemy turns tears into joy and it turns swords into plowshares and it turns evil into the highest good. What do you think?
I don't think I could have said it any better, to be honest with you. I think you're absolutely right. And I agree with you. I think George has gotten lighter in the last few years. It's sort of like that Dylan song, I was so much older then, I'm younger than that now. And I agree with your prognosis of what we have to do. This is exactly right. We need to jujitsu the situation, aikido the moment. We need to take the strength of those who may not have our better interests at heart and turn it against them. And I don't mean in a violent way. That's why I chose to make, with my wife Sharon, we chose to make films because it was a way that we could use the medium that they use to turn us into fearful people and turn it around and turn it into alchemy. And I think 2012 is alchemy. I think it's a moment in time where we as a people, because of the internet, because of the things that the modern world has given us, we have a chance to collectively decide who and what we are going to be. And we don't want to be following leaders, and we don't want to be thinking that anyone's going to save us. We want to do it ourselves, and it's going to be a tough job.
Jay, paint us a picture of what you think 2012 will look like, the world.
I'll paint you two pictures, one I hope for and one I don't. The one I hope for is people living in semi-rural conditions, connected by the internet. We still have our electronic toys, but life is slowed way down. We're not hurrying anymore. We don't get, oil is too expensive anyway. We can't hurry. There'll be a little bit less traveling, but there'll be a lot more community and a lot more understanding each other, but we're still going to be interconnected and we're not going to be isolated communities. We're going to be interconnected by the internet, by the different things, and we're going to be exploring a worldwide consciousness. And that's what I hope happens. The dark side of that is a cameras on every street corner, robot cops or Terminators even, which I hear they're making in the military right now, everyone being watched, snitch society where there's youth groups like the Hitler Youth walking around and making sure that you are politically correct and, hate speech is fast. I'm against hate speech, but I don't think that we can govern how people talk unless it incites violence. So we need to watch how we slip into a kind of a fascist techno-fascist nightmare. And I think that that's the road we're at right now. And I think that's what Nostradamus is saying in the book and in his drawings and a lot of other people are saying.
Let's go to Brooklyn, New York. Bruce, welcome to the program. Hi, Bruce.
Hi, how are you tonight?
Good, Bruce. Thank you.
Great. I actually have two questions for you. First, if there's a possibility of a major worldwide catastrophe coming, pole shift, continents sinking, new continents rising up, and the global elite is aware of this, and they know this is possible, then why are they going ahead with all these plans for the North American Union, the New World Order, and so on and so? Because it doesn't seem like it's going to last that long. I mean, it seems like we're heading into a much more primitive environment if under that catastrophe scenario. And the second question is just, what do you think of the crop circles? Like, what would you say they signify? And that's it.
Okay.
Two easy questions. No, not really.
Yeah.
No, the first question is really a great question. It's actually the best question ever. Why, if there is a catastrophe coming, are they planning their new world order? It doesn't seem to make sense. It seems to be a contradiction. And my answer to that is, I think they're just hedging all their bets. I mean, I think they're building their underground chambers. They know that something is going to happen, but just in case it doesn't happen, they're also putting in the machinations for their political structure that they wish to have at the end of this era. And that's why I think we're in an era of where there's a window of opportunity before they fully clamp down on whatever it is they're going to do, and now. And so I think we have this real opportunity to actually remake a world without whatever it is they're planning. On the second one with crop circles, I have no idea. I thought for years that they were made by people. And then I thought that they might have been made by for some military purpose, but with the ones that are coming out now, they're so complicated, unbelievably convoluted designs, incredible sacred messages in them. It is either someone has invented some kind of electromagnetic machine that can make these things with cookie cutter patterns, and that's what they're doing, or some extraterrestrial or Earth intelligence is trying to communicate with us. We're down to that now. I don't know what else it can be.
All right, thank you for that. Next up, let's go to Madison, Wisconsin, east of the Rockies. Sean, you're on with Jay Widener.
Yeah, hi, Jay, and hi, George.
Hi, Sean.
I am a musician, so I've really enjoyed a lot of tonight's show, with Jay being a movie maker. And I just wanted to say something very unusual happened today, which has been kind of happening more and more recently. I believe that as we head towards this December 21st, 2012, I believe that maybe some type of a veil is being lifted, or something. Some of us who are maybe more aware of the universal consciousness are becoming more tapped into it, or whatever. But earlier today, I was getting ready to write a song with my cohort music. And I just got a run of consciousness, so I just jotted down these names, these words: Edgar Cayce, Nostradamus, global warming, Mayan prophecy, apocalypse, dates and times, December 21st, 2012, 11/11, and it goes on a little bit. And I ended up writing a song about it. At the very end, my consciousness just kind of went streaming, and somewhere in the middle, I'm not going to recite the whole thing, but somewhere in the middle, I talk about the heart. It says, pondering everything, your heart begins to swing back towards remembering who you are. And then I remember in the very beginning of the show, you were talking to George, and you mentioned something about the heart being something that connects you to your higher self, or something along those lines. And I pretty much will leave you with that.
Yeah, well, you know, this is the thing. The veil is being lifted, and supposedly the myths say that this happens every time, every 13,000 years. And so this is the time when we learn everything, and we, you know, I don't know if it's a short time and then we start forgetting it again or whatever, but this is that time, and the veil is lifting, not just for some people, it's lifting for everybody. And that's why people are kind of in a state of shock, because they psychically know that something is going on, but they don't know why. This is all part of the hyperdimensional dynamic of what is happening. As the sun's electromagnetic field is suppressed by whatever is happening, we're kind of new information from the galaxy is allowed to flow in. yeah, there's radiation and synchrotron and gamma rays, but also, may I suggest that possibly information is flowing in right now, and from a galactic mind, maybe. And we're being fed this information, and a new enlightenment is occurring, and it could be over even by 2012. And we just go on for the next 13,000 years with what we learned from this particular download. So I don't know, but it does appear that there's, you know, something going on a telepathic or a psychic level. Everyone is talking about it.
Jay, if anything occurs, why do people think it'll happen on December 21st, 2012? Why exactly the date of the Mayan calendar end?
Well, they shouldn't be thinking that, but let's hope nothing does happen. Otherwise, all of us who are saying that nothing will happen on that day will look like fools.
But, yes, that's true.
But, you know, the Mayan calendar is just marking the end of this long count date. But the last cartoon, the last 19 to 20 years of this thing, was what they were really concerned with. And that started in 1992, and it ends in 2012. And so that's the period. It's a season of the apocalypse, I like to call it. It's a season where this age ends. And to be sitting kind of in the bleacher seats watching this happening and all going down has just been rather amazing, actually. And I can't imagine what other generations would have considered about all of this that's going on all at once around us.
Okay, next up, let's go to Big Bear, California, west of the Rockies. Hello, Mary.
Hello, George.
Hi.
Thank you for having this guest on.
He is superb.
He is. My first is that he keeps talking about December 21st, 2012. That's my 65th birthday. That has me scared stiff sometimes.
Well, I used to live in Big Bear. It's a wonderful place. And I don't think you have anything to worry about. In fact, it's going to be a wonderful event because we're going to make it a wonderful event. So.
Oh, I think it is. And I've been planning on it for quite a while. But you keep talking. You've also talked about the, what is it, the gasoline. I listened to George. I think it was in November when you had David Bloom on.
Mm-hmm.
And his book.
On ethanol.
Alcohol Can Be a Gas.
Yep.
I have bought that book, and I'm looking for a still, and I'm planning on using it if we go to the barter system. I think we're going to be little regional cities, and Big Bear
is going to
be really a center of it.
I completely agree with that. I think we're going to be turning into little regional areas, and we're going to be, and your each area will be governed by the amount of water and resources that you can get, and people will be growing their own food and using the, exactly those alcohol generators, all sorts of nifty things that are out there. But because we try to be so centralized, all we can think of is in this centralized way, but if we just slightly even decentralize and liberate ourselves from being addicted to these gigantic energy machines. And I think it's going to be a better world. And, you know, Big Bear is going to be a wonderful place for life in the 21st century, I would think.
I'm looking forward to the future.
Me too. I think it's a wonderful time to be alive. We should all be thankful that we're here and use that opportunity to do something with it. And the incredible things that we've been given, like the internet and radio and you know, video and movies and all these things, it's just incredible what we've been given. The amount of information that is loose in the world right now is overwhelming, and we need to use it and discern what is real and what isn't. And this is all part of a learning process that's going on worldwide. The internet is facilitating it.
We'll be back with final calls in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, we're going to talk with two individuals who are just plain weird. Yep, they're weird. That'll be our next Coast to Coast show. We're back with Jay Widener. We're going to take your final phone calls this hour. Jay, what can the average person do to kind of save themselves from this mess?
Well, I think that they need to start thinking about getting together with friends and possibly setting up alternative communities in places outside the cities. Some people may just want to buy a few acres somewhere out in the country just to make sure they got a place to go if their needs that might happen, if things bad might happen. And people in the city need to start thinking about turning their front yards and things into gardens and working with their neighbors. There's a lot of land that's being wasted and use that and start to building these things from the ground up. We're not really going to get any help from above. I know everyone thinks that there's a great savior on the horizon. We're all going to be saved, and our mortgages are going to be paid, and they're going to find us jobs and all of this, but it isn't going to happen. I don't think we should. I think it's almost suicidal to think that. So we need to rethink what we're doing here, and we need to boldly go forward, and we need to have people come forward who can help us do this. This is what the future shift thing I'm starting or trying to start, helping to start with these other people is all about, is teaching people the skills, the real skills of how to survive in a world of increasing scarcity.
Okay, back to the phones we go. Nashville, Tennessee, east of the Rockies. Colby, go ahead.
Hey, what's up, George? I really enjoy the program.
Thank you.
It's a great alternative to all the biased mass media out there. And the question I have is, if Jay's familiar with John Titor, the dude who supposedly came back from the future?
John Titor,
yeah. Excuse me. But I know he had some predictions about 2012, and I was just wondering if any of those were coming to light or coming true at all. So I'll take my question off the air. But
all right.
Thanks, man.
You're welcome. Are you familiar with the time traveler John Titor?
I think I have heard about it, but no, I have to admit I'm not that familiar with it.
We've done occasional shows about him. He came from the year 2036.
Oh, yeah.
He came back, and he made some predictions, and we'll see what happens if they come to fruition.
That would be, we'll follow that.
Kind of uncanny, though, it is. I do believe that time travel in the future will be possible, don't you?
I think it's already possible. I think that, I think prophecy is a form of time travel, and I think that we just, something is going to occur. This veil, as it lowers, a veil is lowering, a psychic veil of some kind, we're all going to be prophets, and we're all going to see into our future. And when you can see into your future, you lose your fear because you now know what's going to happen. So that's what I mean. A psychic breakthrough of this magnitude will affect things on a political level, on every kind of level. And so that's why I'm very optimistic, because I now know that anything can happen.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. Tony in British Columbia, Canada, you're up with us. Hey, Tony.
Hey, George. Love your show.
Thanks, Tone.
Great guest you got on, by the way. About 25 years ago, I was given a text by a French anthropologist, I think it was written around the turn of the century, concerning the Great Pyramids of Giza. Mm-hmm. Basically, what I was concerned with was the descending chamber, going into the Chamber of Ordeals. Is your guest Jay familiar with this?
I've been in it. Yeah, I'm familiar with it. Yes.
Well, of course, that was sort of like a prophetic timeline. Am I not right?
Yeah, there are people who say that that's what's going on, yeah.
Yeah, and at the bottom of the chamber, it opens up into like a square room,
yeah.
Which this particular anthropologist interprets as a three-dimensional graph, starting at the beginning of the century and ending in 2012. And apparently, if you go from one side to the other, the up and down graph looks like a mountain range when you look into this room, does it not?
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
Yeah, and the further one axis is time, of course, and as you go across the room, if you look at the left side of the room as being people who are material orientated, the graph is quite rough, and of course the more you go over to the spiritual side on the right hand side, it seems to be a smoother plane, which this fellow interpreted as being those who are sort of stuck into materialism are going to have a really rough time of it, and those who are more or less on the spiritual plane are going to basically have a fairly smooth ride. The thing about it, though, is that this chamber does end at 2012, and it does the whole passageway does continue on for another some odd 100 years or so, but it seems to fall off to nothing. And this is where I, basically, when I read this thing, I was blown away. I've been studying cultural anthropology since I was 15 years old, and I'm 50 now. And everything that this guy was saying just correlated. And everything you're saying seems to, you know, just reaffirm reaffirm these things. I don't know if you have some opinion on that or...
Well, I mean, there's different theories on these things with the pyramid. You know, I think the pyramid is definitely... The pyramid complex and the Sphinx are definitely pointing towards this time period. There's no doubt. And they were pointing at the time period of 13,000 years ago at the age of Leo. So the whole complex seems to be saying that there's this 13,000-year cycle. Or, you know, who knows? Maybe, you know, there's a galactic winter or something, or maybe the galactic winter is ending. We don't know, you know, and... you know, the Hindus say that we descend into an extremely material world at the end of this age, and that they call this age the Kali Yuga. And if the Kali Yuga is ending, then we will advance into a more spiritual being. And this is what Nostradamus is saying in the drawings. He's saying that in the last two of the drawings, number 71 and number 72, he says, the Book of Life has writing on it, and in the other one, the Book of Life is blank. So he's saying, you know, you have a choice at this point in time to decide what your future is going to be. Is there going to be more writing in the Book of Life, or is the Book of Life going to end up being empty?
Wildcard line, Ted, driving around in Tennessee. Hey, Ted.
Well, good morning, George and Jay.
Hiya.
Hi, guys. You caught my attention, Jay, when you were talking about DIA. I never knew there was anything about that until you brought it up. I worked on DIA back in the early 90s. If I could help you with some information, I could tell you a little bit about what I experienced out there.
Well, I'd love to hear about it. Go to Coast to Coast AM when you get a chance, and just click on my name and you can find my site. And go right to an email address there, and I'd love to hear your story.
Okay, yeah, because where you're looking at, just a quickie, where you're looking at what's going on there, and I will email you on that, is I live right next to Buckley Field, and there's a whole underground facility right off to the right there. I mean, if you go to drive out there, there's a chain-link fence and bunkers. When I went out there, this has been many years ago, nobody stopped me or approached me, but I knew I had no business out there. But I'd be glad to email you and kind of give you some information.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I'm collating a lot of emails from witnesses right now, so I appreciate that.
You're going to get inundated.
I am. I already am, actually, by the way.
Mary in Salt Lake City. Go ahead, Mary.
Hi, George.
Hi.
And Jay. This is Mary, Salt Lake City, and I have been working with spiritual healers most all of my life, and lately, I'm trying to make this short, someone came up to one of my husband's classes and said, I feel like I need to meet your wife, and for no reason whatsoever. So she called me. One of our tenants called me, his girlfriend, and within a period of 2 weeks, this global consciousness, we have a group of meditators that we're going to meet in one of the buildings that we have, and just start a group from there, and with no advertising, nothing, you know, no money changing hands, but just people getting together, and they all came to me from I don't know where.
That's happening everywhere.
Is it?
It is.
It surprised me, I'll tell you.
It's weird, and I hear it everywhere because of the nature of my business making these films. I have a lot of contact with these kinds of groups and people, and things are just happening on a level. And this is going to cause serious problems for politicians as people become more psychic.
Yes.
They're going to know everything that's going on, and it's going to be pretty hard to fool anyone. I think that's what's going on right now.
I think so, too.
Yeah, and it's a great thing. You know, there won't be any secrets. We're going to know everything, and you know, it may be that it's just a natural process of human evolution. We don't know, but more and more people are getting serious about who they are and what they want to be, and this crisis in the world is forcing this thing to happen.
I'll tell you, it gave me hope.
Yeah, so. It should.
Thank you
very much. There's lots of reason to hope.
All right, let's take a few more calls here. First-time caller, Nicholas in Edwards, California. Hi, Nicholas.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, thanks.
Hey, yeah, I have a question for Jay.
Okay.
Yep. Just wondering about the Mayan calendar again. Sorry to go back to it, but
yep.
My question was, like, everybody's scared about how it just ends at 2012. What if the guy that made the calendar just died, and that's just where he left off?
Some have thought that.
It's a funny joke, but unfortunately, the Mayan calendar actually doesn't end in 2012. It's the end of a count, and that count just starts up again at 1 on the next day. So, you know, it's a way of counting days. It's a day count. And the day count is incredible because it counts out to 5,200 years, and they say that there's 5 suns. And if you take 5,200 years and you multiply it times 5, it comes out to be 26,000, which is exactly the amount of time that the precession of the equinox happens. So he may have run out of calendar, but he was an incredible astronomer and knew exactly what he was doing on that level, whoever made the calendar.
Dwayne in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Take it away, Dwayne.
Yes, good morning, George, Jay.
Hey.
George, you talked about miracles at the beginning of the show. The lady had a breast cancer problem, and it went away. I've been trying to call in since back to the first of the year. Instead of all the doom and gloom, I predict this to be a year of huge, huge jump in miracles. I'm a believer in miracles, and one of the things that we have to do is be miracle-minded, because we are all, Jay has talked about the universal mind, and it's all one mind, and we need to tap into it to draw miracles into this dimension. So what better way than to use this jumpy monkey to get 10 million people to be of one mind.
Well, now, there you go. There's a man who knows the truth. That's exactly right. And that's what we're trying to do, is we're trying to get everyone to think about the same thing at the same time.
And Jesus said to be of one mind. And just like the previous caller, people will seek other people out to be of that one mind. And so, you know, instead of the doom and gloom, I share the hope that you're talking about. But I think miracles from the universe is going to be a part. It seems like we have to reach the bottom of the valley before we will ever accept that something is God-induced and to pull us up out of the pits.
Or even better, maybe you have to hit the bottom of the barrel to know that the only way out is up.
You have an analogy, Jay, between current events and famous films, and you tie in Titanic. How come?
Well, you know, Titanic is a very interesting film because not only is it the biggest hit of all time, bigger than Star Wars or E.T., made over $1 billion, and the thing that interested me most about Titanic when it came out in 1998 was, why are all these people going to see this film when we already know how it ends? And, you know, everybody knows the ship sinks. You know, what's the drama here? So I went to see the film reluctantly. My wife took me, and I thought it was a chick flick, and it wasn't. It was actually a pretty good film. And the film is an interesting film, and the film is about us today, right now, and that's why it's the biggest hit of all time. We are on the Titanic. We are on an iron ship in the Iron Age, and we're surrounded by wilderness, dangerous wilderness. And in our, you know, in our pride, we think that the ship can never sink. But the ship will sink, and the captain of the ship is going to turn on all 5 engines, and we're going to crash into the icebergs. And that's what the film is about, is the audience. The drama is that the audience knows this is going to happen, and they're fascinated by watching it unfold because they feel it, I believe, happening in their own lives,
yeah,
even in 1998. And I think that's why the Titanic is the greatest film about our age. And interestingly enough, Cameron made, of course, the Terminator films, which are also about machines and how we're caught in this machine world. And it's sort of the dark side of Titanic. And also Titanic is a great film because it's all about time, that you're constantly going from one time to another time. And Cameron is showing you how time is folds in on itself, and the past becomes the future and the future becomes the past. And it's a great film. And I think it's one of the best films ever made. It's better every year.
You know, you can see it 22 times and it still looks good.
It does, and he hasn't made really another film since. And he may have just said, "Well, I did it all. I don't need to do it anymore." But I hear the next Terminator film coming out with Christian, the guy that plays Batman, is going to be really, really good. So I'm looking forward to that.
Jay, we've only got about a minute left. How can people pick up some of your films or view some of the things you've done?
Well, we have a site, Sacred Mysteries, just like it sounds, sacredmysteries.com, and we have a school of Sacred Mysteries. We have Sacred Mysteries Live, which puts on events like the one we had for Jordan Maxwell. We have 2012 events. We've got, you know, an online store, and we're just trying to make media for smart people, sort of like the show, you know, for the daring side of humanity, and the side that the major media seems to be ignoring for whatever reason I can't figure out. So we're going to appeal to that side. We're dedicated to it, and we love every opportunity we can to present an argument that is not only intelligent, but also positive. So that's really our mission, and we're trying to create a better world for everyone, and probably a little bit like your mission, George. So,
well, thank you, Jay. You were operating on all cylinders tonight, my friend. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, George.
For Karis Coburn, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.